You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
What it is, what's up, and welcome everybody to Faces and Feels Anything Goes. That's right, it's the mostly bi-weekly, at least that's my kind of plan, to just talk in and out and around the world of wrestling outside of the usual interview format. Today I'm joined, as always, by Vinyl and Violence's one and only Alex Castillo. What up, my dude?
How's it going?
Always good, buddy. Always good. Bright and early on this Friday morning. And then we've got a special guest with us today. Alex has called in backup. He's tagged in a bud, and it is ring announcer extraordinaire Chris Sherman. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for giving away your evening. Morning for me, evening for you guys. We're just going to talk a little bit today. We're just going to talk shit, really, but the main topic we're going to talk about is ring announcing, something you've been doing for a while, something that I've dabbled in a little bit. I'd seen some of your stuff and that. So let's start with you. Let's talk about how you got into wrestling. To begin with, let's do that thing that I always do on interviews. So we'll talk about what were some of the first faces You good?
Plain and simple. I would say maybe 6 or 7 years old, probably mm-hmm. 1981, 82-ish, something like that. And I can remember my grandmother would watch wrestling. We had a TV in our kitchen, and she would cook food for the family. But before everybody got in the kitchen, she would watch it like on Saturdays and Sundays. Mm-hmm. And she would always say, "I watch it because they're hunks." You know what I mean? She just saw these big, sweaty dudes. You know what I mean? So she loved it. But I'm just saying, my grandmother was like the woman that raised me. So yeah. I was always with her, and I started watching it. And then I can never forget in, I think, 83, something like that, I saw Hulk Hogan win that title from Iron Sheik. And I just remember everybody going nuts. Like, I didn't know all storylines, but I remember they're making it a big deal. It's got to be a big deal. So, I mean,
that's,
you know,
actually
every weekend I'd watch, you know?
Yeah, so that's actually a great point, because I've talked about this with a few people before. You know, I've interviewed a lot of American people, and you know, wrestling's quite a bit more prevalent for you guys than it is over here in Australia. When that happened, like for me, you know, Hulkamania, fucking America running wild, all that kind of stuff, that doesn't really hold the same thing for me. I'm thinking Hulk's cool, but I'm not feeling patriotic about it and stuff. As a young kid, when you're seeing this and he's taking back the title for America and stuff, is it like the 4th of July? Are people celebrating in the streets? Like, are you one of the kids running to Hulk Hogan in his motorcycle, like in that fucking clip that you'd always see? Like, what was the level, you know, from your child's eyes of, like, the level of excitement around you? Were you like, this is an American hero? Like,
I tell you what, Hulk got me hooked. And, of course, that Rick Derringer, I think that's who it did, that did the I Am a Real American song and everything. I mean, I think that got more people, like, American Hulked than anything else. I mean, you want to go a little political. I mean, I guess the Cold War, you know, being the Sheik was where he was from. And, you know, the issues that were going on with America and Russia and, you know, communist places those days. I mean, that I think was a big draw, but I mean, the Rocky movie also blew it up, you know, when he played Thunderlips.
Yeah.
So, but I'll say this, like, Hulk is what really got me hooked into wrestling. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it was like Hulk and Piper. And I mean, that's when I started, like, really, you know, I don't even think I knew that I liked the heels as much as I did back then, because you're a kid. Mm-hmm. But when I look back at it, I mean, they were the ones that I gravitated. They had the best personality, you know, so.
Well, isn't that what you said too, Alex? Like, your mum used to like all the heroes and stuff, so you were instantly drawn to like all the heels?
Is she literally just like Goldberg? That's it.
And you're like, I like everybody that fights Goldberg as a result.
Yeah, and just at one by one, everyone just gets demolished. So I just sit there crying as a kid.
Oh, that is fucked.
My mom listened to that podcast. I wasn't expecting it because I posted it on Facebook, and my mom has a Facebook and she never uses. She somehow saw that podcast and decided to listen to it. She shoots me a text and is like, I still love Goldberg.
To this day?
I didn't even know what she was talking about at first. And I was like, oh, you listened. That's so funny.
So Chris, how did you then go from, you know, being a fan of wrestling into being involved with it? I know for me, it kind of took most of my life. You know, I'm in like my early 40s now. So it wasn't until I like did podcasting and then like an avenue sort of opened up for me to kind of be involved. So did you do any training or anything like that? Or was it sort of the same for you? You just sort of stumbled backwards into it later.
No, I'll give you the shortened version of it. In around 2017, I had just gotten out of the second rehab I'd ever been in. Won't go into the story. I'm doing great now, but I mean, I had a lot of issues that actually took me away from wrestling and my love of wrestling for years because, you know, that stuff comes first. But yeah. I needed something this time around to kind of sit on my hands a little bit and take up some of my time. And that's when I started finding more indie stuff, you know, and, you know, the more and more I got into it, I actually met Alex. This was 2017. I got clean, but I met Alex in probably around 2018-ish, 19. Mm-hmm. That's when All In everything happened. You know, the big explosion of, you know, GCW happening, me and him going to GCW Voltage shows and, you know, really just that beginning of kind of what you've seen in the last 5 years.
Like all the super indie stuff that is the same now. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in certain ways, I looked back and was kind of like, you know, I've never done anything in it. I wasted a lot of my life, you know, when maybe I could have tried. And there's a small promotion that's around us an hour away called 1CW. And we were just going to some of their events. And the ring announcer wasn't really good. His suit was way too oversized. I just didn't think it looked the part, especially just everything I've seen. And I said to one of my friends who wrestles with them, I said, you know, I said, nothing on the guy that's doing it. I said, I could do a better job at that. I said, if you need something, you let me know. Guy called me up, the promoter, 2 days later and said, can you do it? And I was like, yeah. He said, we got an event 2 days later. Let's do it. I went out and bought a suit and note cards and a Sharpie and literally walked around that locker room with not knowing anybody, just saying, hey, who's who, and get in that ring and did it. And, you know, I will say, I mean, I had a lot of people that I learned from and watched over the years that, you know, gave me, you know, not only the confidence to do it, but, you know, I mean, I kind of mimicked all of them. I try to put all these people that I really liked over the years, you know, into one and then just do it my style. And absolutely. I don't know. I mean, the first time I did it, it just kind of came off.
Yeah. I think it came off like from the clips that I've seen, I thought you came off experienced and professional. And I think with anything when it comes to, even if you're not, you know, experienced and you haven't been doing it for too long, I think confidence and projection can carry you like a really long way when it comes to any kind of hosting gig. You know, like I've hosted a friend's wedding or whatever. I was like the MC for it. And then I was, you know, do other things or stuff. And it all just comes back to bands and doing those different things. It's about, you know, if you don't really let them see you sweat and you project and you laugh at the audience and let them see who you are, it's all fine. And I know that feeling when you go to a show and you're like, everything they're doing is really good, but there's a piece missing. And you're like, the person doing this particular role, like, I'm like, dude, this just isn't for you. And that's not that you're shit person. It's not that you're anything. It's like you literally look uncomfortable doing it. And I don't think you're having a great time doing it and you're stuttering and you're dropping your cards. Like, it's just, you're not a host. You know what I mean? And that can go on to affect the entire night. You know what I mean? The entire way the production is perceived comes back to that host in a way. You know what I mean? It's the linchpin. It makes it seem real. So it needs to be legit. So once you started that, did you start really getting the bug for it? How long ago was that? Like, how long have you been doing this for now?
That was maybe 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, okay. So it has been a while.
Back to one thing that you're just saying right now. That's one thing that I believe. You know what? I mean, it's do I want to be a personality in a certain way that people likes, maybe even go over a little bit with the people? Absolutely. But that is not my job. Mm-hmm. My job is to go out there and to hype up that promotion first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Second of all, make all of those wrestlers that come out through that curtain sound like a god.
Absolutely.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Everybody over.
I might be talented to do what I do, but they're the talent.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. You know? But there is like you would agree though, there is like a certain charisma where you do need to make it seem like a professional, enjoyable time. You know what I mean? Like,
I put stank on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's more what I'm trying to say. It's not about you being a comedy act, though. Now I think about it, when I did do it, I was a comedy act in one part, but that was their idea, not mine. So, you know, you do need to, I guess, when you're a ref, it's wrestling because it's improv, like ring announcing, anything like that, you do need to be able to roll with the punches because it can be a fucking crazy place. You know what I mean? And so it's been a couple of years now. And so how many places are you doing this for now? Because I know at least two of that, I think, but are you actually getting quite a few bookings?
Steady, the one CW gig I've been doing, and I did the last two PORs, and it's funny. The first one that I did, they asked me because their regular guy didn't come. Second time, their regular guy did come, but we got to do it together. And you know what? I'm okay with that, you know? Mm-hmm. But I've also picked up, I'm doing my first one of this. It's called Underground Wrestling Federation. They are out of originally Yardley, Pennsylvania, but they're going to be running an event in Philly. So that's going to be fun to go up and do that. That's actually June 30th, this Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really fun. That's awesome. And so from there, with the ring announcing thing, are there bigger goals for you? Or do you think you would also branch into other areas? Like, have you ever tried commentary or anything like that? Or is it like purely is ring announcing kind of the main focus?
Again, there's always that one time where somebody doesn't show up, you know? So I actually did commentary for one CW one time, and my promoters came back and they were with positive. I mean, I just think it feels like, you know, when you're doing it, you definitely want to, you have to have a good IQ of obviously what the names of moves are. You know, you don't want to be stuttering around this and that. And I'm pretty quick on that. But also when it comes to IQ, I think just having, you know, knowledge is just how things work. You know, I mean, knowing it's an elimination match and making sure you're telling your people that are viewing you, let's say there's four people in it, you know, why did that guy get pinned and why didn't, you know, the little reminders, the little subtleties to remind them if they're just for some reason turning on, wow, this is what's going on right now.
Sure. So. Absolutely. Alex, from the outside, just want to get your observation as well. So as somebody that hasn't done ring announcing, but does go to like a lot of shows, is that something that you had ever picked up on, you know, the level of professionalism or projection and stuff like from a ring announcer and how it affects your enjoyment of a show?
Yeah. I mean, every part of the show, in my opinion, has to be at least somewhat professional,
yeah, like at a level,
absolutely. You know, I agree with Chris. When we started going to one CW, he had gone a few more times than I had, but you know, you could just tell the ring announcing, it was something that somebody was doing for fun and not loving to do, I guess, if that's makes sense.
Sure. Just like and helping out, liked being a part of it, but not like actively crafting the, you know,
knowing the talent whatsoever.
Yeah,
Rob was just helping out. I mean, and I don't mean like that, but I mean, he'll do, this guy Rob that was doing it, he'll do anything for one CW. And
that's great.
He runs the hard cam now, so you know, I'm just saying he was doing his duty for his promo.
Yeah,
not stabbing anybody or anything.
Exactly right. He was jumping in and taking care of it, but he wasn't like somebody who's like, I want to be a ring announcer, I want to develop this and know these people and stuff like that. Do you have any stories, Chris, of the wrestlers like ribbing you or making your job harder? Because I know all the talent at our promotion. Dude, Where's My Ring? I do commentary there, right? So the first thing when I found out that Adam, who normally does the commentary, couldn't do it, the obvious person to step in was me because I know everybody and I've been involved since the start. And so I came to everybody, group chat. I'm like, hey, guys, can you give me all your info? I'm going to get it so I just know it off the top of the dome. I don't want notes, blah, 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 blah. Answer I got back, no. Nobody's going to give me anything. We'll figure it out on the day. And I'm like, guys, I'd love to like do a really good job of this. They're like, you'll be fine. And I'm like, you motherfuckers. So then like on the day, I've got like, you know, my clipboard and stuff. And I'm like, hey, can you write, you know, just write out some notes about you. You know what I mean? Hailing from where, blah, blah, blah. I know a lot of it, but you know, fucking thing. And the amount of bullshit that got written on that fucking thing. I mean, dude, is that kind of promotion anyway? But like, they were really like the whole intro I did with Shaheel and James Hartness really began as like a rib on me to just like make me do more and to like fuck around with me. You know, have you ever found that? Is like 1PW and stuff, are they quite a bit more serious about it? I mean, it might just be the Australianness of it all, or do you find that sometimes they'll fuck with you?
They're kid friendly, and when I say that, very family friendly.
Oh, you mean the opposite of what we are.
Cater more towards that, but I mean, I have had a few wrestlers. I mean, I'll give a few names. Shout out Chris Wilde. Shout out Stan Styles. They sometimes, you know, I'll have two cards worth of things. You know, I got to read off.
Bullshit. Yeah.
But you know what? I love stuff like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not that it even gives me a little more spotlight, but I mean, I just think it's fun doing all of those crazy things for the ones that, you know, need, you know, something, you know.
And it mixes it up. You know, the crowd enjoys it. They're in on the joke. It's like a whole
thing. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Now that's awesome.
Also, I mean, little things that have happened. I guess just the one thing, I wouldn't say it's a pet peeve of mine, but I'm that type of guy that likes to get there. You know, if we're bell time is at 6, I like to get there at 1. Yeah, I like to get everybody there. I like to get the card. I like to write all my notes out. But damn it, there's always that one or two people that's got to get there 5 minutes before bell time. I'm running around like an idiot, you know, getting that last one.
Yeah, yeah.
But last and foremost, so the only thing that's actually really happened, and, you know, some people might look at this as all went wrong. For me, it went more right than it could have. There's this guy who plays a real crazy part. Give a shout out. He's one of the trainers. His name is Mark Haro.
Actually just about to tell you to tell this story.
So they'd kind of been like that tag team. They're called the Horribles. His name's Mark Haro. So they're these crazy guys, the Horribles. So,
yeah, okay.
They've been doing this thing where, you know, they kind of, you know, grab my suit. They rough me up a little bit. Sure. I'm not supposed to look them directly in the eye type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, reminds me of Minoru Suzuki and how Kevin Kelly used to be. Don't look directly in his
eye. Yeah, yeah. Like, intimidated.
But well, this one particular time, they said, you know, we're gonna do something this time. And, you know, we want you to get involved in it. And it's going to look good for you. But blah, 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 blah. So the gimmick was they were supposed to hit the promoter with a chain around the dude's hand, hit him with the chain.
Sure.
And at that moment, it's supposed to be the ring announcer's like, I'm tired of this shit. I'm stepping in.
Yeah, yeah.
So I step in front of the punch. I'm supposed to take the bump. You know, I trust the bump. It's whatever.
Yeah.
But the chain that was hanging ended up clipping up and cutting me on the top of my head. Well, we're like a no blood thing too, so it's kind of like any wrestler gets busted open and bleeded, you got to take it home type thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm laying on the ground and whatnot, and they can see I'm bleeding. I don't know I'm bleeding yet. And, you know, one of the wrestlers looks like he's kicking me, and then he kind of leans down. He's like, "You okay? You're bleeding?" And I just kind of look up and I'm like, "Kick me out of the fucking ring." You know what I mean?
Like, I need to get out of here.
Yeah, sell this. Yeah, you know what I mean?
If I'm gonna bleed for the fucking promotion, at least make it a fucking, you know, a spot.
And that was the thing. Being a deathmatch guy, like I said, I thought it was cool taking a bump. I was like, you know, I bled inadvertently. Oh, that's a
bump. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know? Yeah, hard way.
Yeah.
That's sick. That's really funny. I haven't had to... I was going to say I haven't had to do anything physical in wrestling, and technically I haven't in the wrestling promotion, though I did host a wrestling quiz night called WrestleBrania. They tour around Australia, and
That's a great name.
Yeah, I know. It's really fun. It's like wrestling themed quiz and stuff, and they come with the Fringe Festival and things like that. And I hosted this one, and the conclusion of the show, do you guys know who Damian Slater is?
No.
So he's one of the members of TMDK. He was the Australian representative in the WWE Cruiserweight Classic, you know, that they had on NXT. Well, anyway, so he's on the panel as well, and the whole thing is he's one side of kind of the panel, and the other side is Harry from Survivor, who's also a wrestler in Perth, but he was, like, on Australian Survivor. And they've kind of got a bit of a back and forth, right? And the whole thing's a work. Like, obviously, it's wrestling. But at the end of the quiz, there's going to be a bit of an angle where they have a confrontation. Anyway, it ends up where, so I am, as the host of the thing, I'm sort of like digging at Damian Slater like the whole time. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, and member of TMDK, Damian Slater. I'm like, but does that even really count when you're not on New Japan TV? Weird, you know, fucking and blah, blah, blah. Talking about like, and the biggest loser in the Cruiserweight Classic, like, you know, like thing. And he's yes. like, yeah, no, it was always a dream of mine. I'm like, kind of like that dream that got snuffed out when you didn't get into WWE. Right? Like, it's constant. Uh-huh. And so, like, I'm burning him, like, the whole time. And so at the end, and I'm giving, like, lots of points to the good guys and taking away points from them and shit like that, right? It's like 1,000 points to Harry, negative 1 points to him because we clearly don't like each other. And so at the end, I'm like, I'm standing up and I'm announcing like who the winner's going to be, and Damian Slater hits me with a low blow, like from behind, like the classic low blow. I go down, Harry fucking gets him and chokes him out, and that's sort of like the end of the thing. But yeah, like I had to do that, like take a header off the stage, and I'm laying there. And afterwards, my friends were like, "Are you fucking okay?" I was like, it's a work, homie. So like, it's fucking.
Yeah, that's how it was. I'm back there laughing and everything, and they're all coming up. Are you okay? Are you okay? And I'm like,
this is awesome. This is exactly what I wanted to have. Yeah, no, that's dope. But yeah, that's kind of crazy stuff that can fucking happen in wrestling, really, because you just got to make it work on the fly, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes they'll be, you know, I don't know. Sometimes they won't give me all the info on just how something will go over. You know what I mean? So I got to literally keep my eyes peeled just to see how it is. Because, I mean, it is the type of thing. I might do the ring announcing also, but I have to do the over as well. Sure. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, if it's something that's a disqualification or a double count out, I got to see that so I can say, you know, as a result of a double count out, you know, and if there's a title involved, but, you know, and also announced, but because, you know, of a double count out, the title doesn't change hands.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing that for two reasons, not only the audience, but we also are, I'll say televised. I mean, it's a local network, but I mean, we do have a lot of eyes that watch it. So I want to make sure that the viewers at home know what's going on.
Absolutely. And, you know, that comes back to that professional, you know, way that it's displayed to everybody. You know what I mean? Like, it needs to be at a certain level. Otherwise, people might turn it on and go, nah, this isn't fucking well done, and not turn it on again. So that's important.
Absolutely.
We were gonna chat as well about a little bit of Forbidden Dawson's that's coming up. But before we do, I just remembered we're guys who like Deathmatch. Like, you were doing announcing for JJ Escobar's thing, right? But like, I think Alex sent me a clip and people were coming off the roofs of houses and shit like that. How's that been?
It's insane out there. I've been going to events there, not all the events. They do it in seasons since they do it outdoors, you know. They got to do it when it's warm out, but I mean, they do some of the craziest shit that you will ever see. I mean, last year I went to one and it was called a mortar match. It was Matthew Justice and one of their guys, Kevin Chaos. And they took the fight all over the yard through windshields, everything. But the winner, though, the only way you could win is if you strapped a helmet on your opponent that was rigged up with, you know, those mortars you stick in the tubes, those big fireworks.
Well, I mean, I kind of know what they are, but we don't have fireworks in Australia, so I wouldn't be able to tell them the difference, but I know you guys are shooting them off everywhere all the time.
There are many versions of the big stuff that you do see at big events, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Stuff
that you do are they the things that, like, the Hardy Boys would shoot at each other on their property, like in those, like, mad videos and stuff?
But, I mean, that's how they won. I mean, whoever could put the helmet on the other guy and light this firecracker off with it on their head.
I mean, that's so funny. That sounds like a great time. If I was just, like, drinking beer in a field and watching these absolute idiots kill each other, I think I'd have a pretty great time. Like, I've always really enjoyed the, like, backyard wrestling that GCW did, like when El Schlacko fucking hit JJ Escobar with a car. Like, all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Exactly. And things that are funny about it, too, is, I mean, you do get people, you got to think where they're doing it at, too, is in a place called Timberville, Virginia, which is way out of where I would say not the mecca of independent wrestling, but definitely everything kind of happens in that Philly, South Jersey area. Mm-hmm. Here, I mean, it's all over the country, but it is a hot spot, you know, Jersey. Mm-hmm. But so anybody that's really, you know, like, you know, a call it a smart mark or just whatever, it's tough to get, you know, 250 miles away. But you do get people that go out there, but they have a fan base of their local, you know, people that is, they're fun as hell to be out there with. I mean, they're definitely very, very country out there, you know, and I mean, but they're a blast. Really good people. You go out there, you know, your cell phone doesn't exactly work because you're kind of out in the country, mountains everywhere. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit terrifying if somebody gets injured though, right? Because it's nowhere near fucking anything.
Hospital's like 45, 50 minutes away. And they'll talk about it all the time. I mean, usually what will happen, they have obviously like, you know, local stations, you know, that at least if it's a cut or something that they do, they'll send somebody out that's qualified to wrap
have them
it,
on hand. We do the same. Yeah, exactly.
We
always have like a first aid guy to one of our shows. He's actually one of the refs. He works like as an ambulance, like paramedic and stuff. And so he'll either be just side off or he'll even be the ref in the ring, depending on what it is. So he's a super amazing person to have on hand because he's just, he's always geared up and always has like his bag and everything like that, which is really good.
There's quite a few you know, people that are registered nurses around the scene and stuff around here that actually are fans, and they'll give their time. You know, they might go to a show, but they're the first if something's bad, you know, they'll come out and, you know, be like, oh, hey, you know, so-and-so, and they'll run into the back and, you know, so there's definitely kind of no shortage of people that are qualified that, you know, do help out with that. So
that's really cool. That's really cool. All right, then. Well, I think we've given everybody a bit of a vibe with it. Like, and I guess it goes out to anybody, you know, if it's something that you're interested in doing, like as far as ring announcing, and you think that you could, you know, project and like be good at the, like Chris is the perfect example. Like you can talk to your local promotion. You can be like, dude, like if you ever need anybody, I'm available. I can help out. You know, volunteering and helping out in wrestling goes like a long way. You know, you really do have to kind of earn your way and sort of earn respect and earn trust and things like that. But, you know, put yourself out there because, you know, it might be something that you're good at.
And one thing, just stay humble to anybody.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Alex says I'm humble to a fault sometimes, but, you know, and that's, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world, but I will say, you know, I mean, I definitely didn't go out there, you know, get that rush of adrenaline once or twice and think I'm the shit.
Yeah,
you know, it's true. Like each time is a new challenge. And one thing I will say about, you know, being able to do like JJ's promotion is, you know, I will say I turn into the biggest geek mark, you know, when I get to announce like Mickey Knuckles, you know, Shane Mercer, just, you know, Casanova Valentine or just somebody like that. I mean, these are guys that I just absolutely love watching. So to be able to, you know, rip that name out of my mouth, oh, it's so much fun.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I ended up screaming my fucking lungs out doing it. Like by the end of the show, I'd literally blown out my voice because I didn't really have so much of a plan. I knew I was going to I don't think I have like a real classic kind of voice like you do, you know, that real classic announcer's voice. I kind of went a different way with it. If you've ever seen a friend of mine, Righteous Jesse, he used to announcing in Southern and Grand Prix, I was like, he announces like he's a fucking hardcore singer, you know? And I was like, I'm not that, but I'll sort of bring that kind of energy and just dress how I normally do and just kind of go and stuff. But yeah, by the end, I was like, I need to work on some vocal exercises if I'm ever going to do this again because I fucking have ripped my lungs out of my fucking body.
See, the thing I like about Jesse also is like he might not, you know, like I said, have that and all the growl and everything, but he's comfortable up there.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you can see that he's having fun can see that he's comfortable up there. And you know what? I think, you know, wrestling fans aren't stupid. They like real, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Whether you have that voice or not, they're going to notice if you're, you know, you're faking or not.
Absolutely. Know? It comes back to what we were initially saying about, you know, being a host and projecting and appearing comfortable and confident. And that goes like a really long way.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, let's do a quick rundown of Forbidden Door real quick. Since we're all here and we're all into the show and it's coming up in a few days, Let's do that, and we can, you know, get everybody's thoughts of this lineup. So let me bring it up here. That's what was all the blinging was going on my sound a second ago. So apologies to everybody. So let's what do we got here? We'll go all the way down to the bottom of the card and kind of work our way up. So according to this document I'm looking at, I don't know if this is the correct order, but it starts off with Chris Statlander and Momo Watanabe versus Willow Nightingale and To Be Determined. Do we have any idea of who this mystery partner will be, or no?
I saw it earlier. I can't remember off the top of my head. I have to look it up.
Mm-hmm. Is it another like Joshi wrestler or?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. It's cool that they've been bringing in like, you know, the Stardom wrestlers and things like that. I think that's really good for the women's division.
Absolutely. Mina's caught fire.
Yeah, she has, hasn't she?
Yeah.
And Willow's been so good. I was bummed that she lost the title, but I think they're still kind of keeping her in the mix. What were you saying, sir?
No, I'm just saying Mina really went over, I would say, with the, you know, I'd say it's an American audience thing. Not that I think Americans, you know, haven't, you know, embraced like, you know, Japanese wrestlers in general that they came in. You know, I mean, you know, Kenta came over here and I'm just saying, look what happened. I mean, he goes back, he's a god, because they kind of, I just don't think they get it. But I just think when it comes to the wrestling skills and the look of Mina, she is very attractive. She's gone over very well in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think she really has that crossover potential more than most in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? And she can, you know, speak the language and all of those things pays off. And then the interactions they've been doing with, like, obviously her and Tony and all that kind of scenario.
Mariah.
Yeah, Mariah, that's right. Next up is the Young Bucks and Okada versus the Acclaimed and Tanahashi. How you guys been liking the new Elite, Young Bucks and Okada and Jack Perry?
Go ahead, Alex.
I mean, I love it. I think it's funny. I like the whole bitch thing.
Well, look, I'll say this about like Okada in AEW, right? Because there's the potential in the like in the way that he's sort of operating in AEW, right? In say WWF back in the day or WWE back in the day, there would be like the kind of the opportunity where and there would have been Japanese guys presented in this way that would come across like tropey and things like that. But because he is who he is and the way he sort of plays it, I think he's sort of leaning into that, but like with a bit of a nod and a wink, obviously. You know what I mean? So it doesn't come across wrong. It sort of comes across really funny. And it's like him playing down on purpose along with the audience and making fun of that. And I really do enjoy it. And yeah, I enjoy what the Bucks were doing and even more since they've brought him in and all their kind of like absolute like nice guy bullshit. And then, you know, the Jack Perry was really cool in New Japan. Obviously, you weren't really watching that, Alex. I'm sure you were, Chris. But he kind of came in and everyone's like, oh, who gives a fuck? But they brought him in with a cool angle. You know, he's tearing up his fucking AEW contract. And they took a situation that was very public and probably quite negative and used it to absolutely launch Jack Perry's career. And I think that's like the perfect way. They handled that situation perfectly. And he made his name off CM Punk, like, and made CM Punk look stupid, to be honest. Like, it was really,
I thought Jack, before the New Japan pop and everything, after everything had happened, I'm like, you know, he's a pussy, he's a kid, he's just, you know, not respecting older guys in the locker room and just kind of doing what the hell he wants. And I tell you what, man, he made me a believer, man.
Yeah.
I love the scapegoat gimmick that he's doing.
Yeah. He's done real good. And then like, you know, putting him with House of Torture in Japan and fucking, you know, doing the goat's head thing. And then Alex and I were talking before about how cool it was when they did the scapegoat bus. And then now that he just like, they fucking rock up at the arena like in a fucking limo and he just pulls up in the bus behind them. It's fucking G.I. Joe spec fucking, he comes with his vehicle. I just think he's making a lot of really smart decisions and it's really paying off for him. And the Acclaimed are always fun. I haven't seen the last Dynamite, so I did not know that they were teaming with Tanahashi, but I always have a huge spot for him. And I know that him and Billy have had interactions before, it usually ends up with both of their asses out. So I'm sure we've got that to look forward to. So,
yeah.
Well, Tanahashi also, man, he's the boss now over there. You know what I mean? Well, one of, you know what I mean? So, you know, I will say, I mean, I think he's lost a little of his oomph as far as being in the ring, just being older. However, I mean, he's still the guy. He's a legend. I mean, you put him on a card, and it, to me, he's one of those guys that doesn't matter, man. You know, just having him there makes wrestling a better place.
Absolutely. And plus, he's the kind of guy that if he ever needs to, he can fucking pull the fucking ripcord and go. You know, and like we've seen it for him before. You're like, oh, he's kind of looking a bit washed up. And they're like, Tanahashi, we need you in the G1. Next minute, the training videos start coming out. Next minute, he's fucking good to go. And then he's versing fucking Moxley, fucking headlining a Forbidden Door. You know what I mean? Like, he can do all that stuff if you need him to. But I think as he's doing a really good job of sort of transitioning himself out of that in-ring role. Still there if you need it, still got his star power, but shining his light on others and moving into that sort of, you know, figurehead role for AEW. And he will be. He'll be considered that, like, Inoki figure, like, in the future, you know, once he's out.
Well,
there.
I think his status right now where it stands, because Alex and our third, our friend Bip, I've talked about it with him, is we always say that Tanahashi is there's John Cena.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a perfect
You can thing. Put the title on him at any time if you need it to carry it for something until the next event, and he's not afraid to lose it, and he'll always have honor holding up whatever he's doing for that company.
Well, perfect example, right? So I went to the Wrestle Kingdom when Kenny Omega was the champion, AEW's announced, and then he needs to drop it. Yeah, they just fucking pulled the fucking cord on Tanahashi. He won the title in the dome right in front of me, just fucking straight out, you know what I mean? And you're like, of course Tanahashi can win it again. You know what I mean? It just works. It just works. Now, this next match I want Alex to tell me about, because I know he is a huge fan of Samoa Joe, Hook, and Shibata, just straight up bullying dudes at this stage. like I've been enjoying it too, but they are just, they're absolute menaces fucking with the Premier Athletes, and now they're going to be facing off with the Learning Tree, Chris Jericho and Big Bill. And I'm surprised it says "and to be determined" here. You would think it would be the Bounty Hunter. So what's going on there? What do I not know? Oh, it is Forbidden Door. So surely it's a New Japan guy, right?
I was going to say real quick, weren't they shooting an angle of some kind that they were going to have Minoru Suzuki? And Suzuki shot a promo back on the thing that said, you know, basically he said, I'm going to bring this one guy, you know, telling him and whatnot. And then Suzuki came up on the monitor and he basically in Japanese, while it's translated, said, you know, I'm, you know, getting back to you to let you know that I don't want to be wrestling with you. I want to wrestle you.
Oh, Chris Jericho.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, so okay. I haven't seen this episode.
Do this match, or is it going to be Jericho and Suzuki?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I have no idea. So I would be happy with either scenario.
So yeah, that happened last night.
Yeah, okay.
Like, what are they going to do with that, Alex?
I have no clue.
Are they maybe going to do, like, Suzuki and, like, Jericho maybe, you know, on what's it called, Saturday night? And then they're going to do the match that you're projecting, you think? Or
Oh, yeah, because they could maybe do, like, a collision match between them, and then he earns his respect, and then they team together the next night or something.
Well, little things that I've seen that I've not necessarily seen on the card is everybody who's everybody this time around from New Japan is here. I mean, you know, you've got Teton, you've got, you know, Takahashi.
Yeah.
You also have, what was it? Orange Cassidy came out and was about to get, you know, jumped, and Stone Pitbull came out.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not saying I necessarily saw them all on this card, but I'm just saying, you know, they're all here.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, what's next? It's next is MJF versus, how do I say the name? Hessian Cero, who I'm not really familiar with. Again, I should have fucking watched this Dynamite, because apparently everything was fucking popping off. Tell me a little bit about this. Do you guys know this match? Because where I was sort of up to, MJF was just fighting Rush all the time.
Yeah, I don't know much about this one. I don't know. I'm not familiar with that company, unfortunately,
yeah,
or that wrestler. He looks cool.
I do watch CMLL, like not a lot, but I know enough about some people. I think it's Hechicero.
Yeah,
Hechicero. I can't remember how it's.
Yeah.
He's one of the older guys. Like, I mean, I'm not saying like a La Mascara or something like that.
Yeah.
He's been around for a very, very long time. And
veteran,
it's not, I'm wondering what the angle though that they are shooting on this. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not saying I expected maybe a little more of a bigger match for MJF, but you know, I don't necessarily understand, you know, what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess maybe just because he's a legend there and MJF here and it's Forbidden Door, you know, they're going to do something that might not necessarily appeal to us to understand.
Yeah.
But I'll bet you they have maybe an audience. They've been doing a lot of work with CMLL that they're trying to get them more on board.
Sure. That's know, probably what it is, and also exposing him to that market and things like that. So
absolutely.
That's probably it. Next up is one of my favorites, ZSJ, and he's going to be wrestling Orange Cassidy. I was really pumped to see clips from Dynamite, to see Robbie Eagles on AEW TV. He's a bud of mine and a hugely talented wrestler that I would love to see more of in like AEW. Obviously, he had a title match on Ring of Honor with Claudio, Alex's favorite wrestler, Claudio, my least favorite.
No, I've been watching Robbie Eagles since, you know, the goggles on the top of the head.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this will be good. I think their characters will work really well against each other, and I'm sure we'll see, you know, lots of you know, we'll see TMDK around the ring and things like that. So there'll be stuff going on. It'll be fun.
That's your squad, huh? You like some TMDK?
Hell yeah, man. They originated in Perth. They're fucking
I could tell almost. It wasn't the exact music, but your music that you use to, you know, start your show, how's that TMDK vibe feeling?
It does have a little bit. It's a little bit screamy. That's a band that me and a bud did called the Thunder Vipers.
Yeah.
I was going to say you're in that band, right?
We only ever did like me and the guitarist wrote heaps of songs, but we're all grown men and, you know, with responsibilities and things like that, so it's sort of been on ice. But yeah, we actually had a pretty prolific catalog that we never did anything with. Next up, I'm actually fucking so pumped to see this has been announced. Owen Hart Foundation tournament first round match. The American Dragon, Brian Danielson, versus the Japanese Dragon, Shingo Takagi. This is a match that I've been fucking calling for forever, like since, you know, the Forbidden Doors started and since Danielson returned and stuff. Dragon versus Dragon is something I've wanted to see. And I got to tell you guys, you probably haven't listened to the episode, but on the Ichiban Sweetcast this week, we did our best case, worst case of booking the G1 Climax leading up to Wrestle Kingdom, and we kind of, you know, did our sort of best case to be Zach and blah, blah, blah. Curtis, my co-host, is not a huge fan of Moxley having the New Japan world title, and all our scenarios were based around Naito winning back that title, right, and then going into G1 and then lean to it. And I kind of got him quite fucking hot to the point where he stormed off the podcast and had to come back later. But, like, I was like, what if Naito doesn't win the title back? And he's like, what do you fucking mean? And I'm like, well, if he doesn't win the title back, that means Moxley's a champion. Moxley's not necessarily in G1. If Moxley is going as arguably the biggest star that they keep bringing into New Japan, if he's going to headline the Dome, that probably means that Zack Sabre Jr. won't win, because they're probably not going to do two Westerners as the headline match for the thing. And then the scenario that I laid out was Shingo winning and then Curtis. That'd actually be sick, especially if he like beat Danielson, then he wins the G1, and then fucking it leads to a title match, you know, the Dragon versus fucking, you know, Moxley in Japan.
Shingo takes out BCC on the way to Moxley.
Exactly. And fucking it writes itself. Good story. I mean, the dude's got a fucking move, like a finishing move called Made in Japan. You know what I mean? The fucking, and brings the title back to Japan. Is this the beginning of that? You know what I mean? Are we seeing fucking, you know, breadcrumbs here that Shingo could actually be the, even if Naito does win it back, are we seeing the beginnings of the Shingo run?
A little feud in LIJ.
Yeah, because you would argue, and as a New Japan fan as well, Shingo's probably the best wrestler in Japan right now, like in New Japan easily. He always delivers with everybody. So is this the beginnings, this match right now, and Danielson has no problem putting people over? Are we about to see the fucking fire get lit under Shingo as he heads back for another title run? He held it great during COVID and everything like that. They just pulled the cord on him and set him loose because they could rely on him. There's a real chance that they might go, you know what, Okada's gone, fucking Ospreay's gone, New Japan's built around headline bangers. We need to have our title on a fucking champion that can always go and always deliver. Maybe they just fucking rely on Shingo. You know, he's in his prime now. You don't want to leave it too long because, you know, he's going to get older and stuff. Maybe it's the time to fucking light him up and really get behind him.
I would be willing to say when it comes to Shingo Takagi, well, I mean, not that things have changed hands a lot in the last years. He's gotten that title, though, correct? One time.
So when Will Ospreay got injured, so Ospreay had won that world title. He got injured and the COVID stuff was going on. He had to go back to the UK. And then they put it on Shingo, essentially. And then Shingo held it all through that COVID time. And then he would go on to – who did he lose it to? I don't remember. Maybe back to Okada, who then lost it to Sonata. I think I'd have to have a look.
He's proved one thing, pandemic or not. I mean, he can hold that title.
Absolutely.
And he can be respected to hold that title.
Absolutely.
Other thing that I think is very interesting that you're saying about the Danielson and Takagi match is that at one time these guys were viewed as super juniors, you know? And now, I mean, I wouldn't say they've gotten any taller. They've just put on a lot more weight and, you know, they're, you know, not these super junior guys anymore. Mm-hmm. But I've always liked those guys that have turned into the heavyweights from other because they're not too big to just be doing, you know, lariats and suplexes. Mm-hmm. You know, they can still move and get around. And you're right, man. Shingo's one of those guys, man, that, you know, even if he's with a guy that necessarily isn't nearly as good as him, he can carry that guy and still make it.
He's one of those guys, right? That was a conversation point. It's like, how many guys in New Japan? I'm sorry, Alex, this is fucking super. We're getting into the fucking deep waters of New Japan.
I'm enjoying listening.
I've given you my login, bro. You need to fucking get up to speed. But like, the whole thing is like, there aren't as many guys in New Japan now that can be those guys that can carry people to that next level of match. Okada was that. Ospreay was that. Omega was that. A lot of those guys are now fucking, you know, a lot of those guys are now in AEW. They've all been signed, right? And I would say of the list of guys, Zach is definitely one of them. Naito can with the right guy, but he can also kind of stumble backwards a bit. But Shingo is 100%, like he's guaranteed, right? Like, every single time.
He's a New Japan guy.
Yeah, exactly, which is wild because he was a Dragon Gate guy. But now he's so entrenched in there and has proved himself so hard. I could absolutely see it. So we'll move on from this match, but it's just something to put an asterisk next to. We could definitely –
he put in good work at PWG back in the day too.
He did, absolutely. So, yeah, I think we could definitely see stuff from him. All right, we touched on a little bit, so we won't get too deep, but obviously it's Tony Storm versus Mina for the Women's World Championship. Tony Storm is on an absolute fucking burner right now. Do we think there's a title change here, or do you think they're going to stick strong with Timeless here?
Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, you go, Alex.
I personally think the shocker is going to be Mariah turns on Mina and goes with Tony.
Yeah.
And that's how they keep it on Tony.
Yeah. Sure.
Because like she's obviously so all over Mina right now. You would never expect that. I was thinking that last night when I was watching it.
Yeah, yeah. And also as well, like her whole character is she's like, you know, cosplaying Toni Storm. She's a huge fan of hers. So, you know, that could have like a lot of influence. They could obviously go the other way and have her turn, but she's going to be the linchpin in this for sure.
I think majorly just the thing that stands out just immediately, and it's the most obvious elephant in the room when it comes to this match, is three players in it. You know, Mariah's not in it, but, you know, she's in the middle of it. But all three stardom, you know, mm-hmm. banger of caliber ladies. And it's funny to me when it's kind of like, you know, you can take these girls out of stardom and stuff like that, you know, and put them, you know, with other girls that are great worldly talent otherwise. But it's mm-hmm. something about like when they're with a promotion and they're with these people so long, it's like they know what they're doing. So I've seen good women's matches in AEW, but I expect something really good of this because of the work that they know what they can do together and the chemistry they have because of Stardom. I think it's going to be great.
Absolutely. I think so too. It's one to circle. Yeah. Next up is TBS Championship versus New Japan Strong Women's Championship match, Mercedes and Stephanie. I mean, I feel like this is probably a pretty foregone conclusion. Mercedes tends to take whatever title of any promotion that she walks into. And also, I mean, like she said, I mean, she says it in her promos, that title was meant for her. It was literally fucking invented for her, that New Japan Women's title. You know what I mean? So I think Stephanie has done really good work and they've done a really good job highlighting her. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the place it probably belongs is with Mercedes and keeping an eye on both, you know, the TBS Championship and the New Japan Women's Championship as well.
Well, that's another thing that I think is going to be really cool about this match is that's going to be that international flair. While everybody's so used to Sasha Banks and, you know, what they let her do in WWE, make no mistake that she's done real good time down, you know, in Mexico, learning lucha and stuff like that. And I think it's the type of thing when you, like I said, with the last match, you get people that have that international flair. I think you see a little something different from I think we're going to see a little bit of a different in style on Mercedes Moné than maybe what people are used to, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. All righty. Next up, AEW TNT Championship ladder match. I always love a big ladder match on here. We've got Takeshita, Briscoe, Jack Perry, Leo Rush, Dante Martin, and more to be determined. Were any more determined on Dynamite?
I don't think so.
No. It's going to be, there's going to be something on Collision. They have, or Rampage. They haven't said who the sixth is yet or what they're doing for that.
Surely it'll be like a New Japan guy or something like that, right?
I think so also. You know who it could be because they've had people in there? It could be, and they've been repping. I think it could be Gabe Kidd.
Oh, that would be so fucking hot if it was Gabe Kidd. Or I would also put Robbie Eagles in there. That would be sick.
They had Gabe Kidd. They were definitely giving him FaceTime the other night.
Yeah, he was on there.
Was he on AEW TV?
He was on Dynamite, but he wasn't in the match. Not that I'm saying. God, there's so many factions. Gabe Kidd is with War Dogs.
War Dogs, Bullet Club War Dogs, yeah.
Yes. So he was out there with Jay White and, you know, supporting. Isn't that who it was? He was supporting Jay White for that match?
I think
so. Yeah, ladder match?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Yeah. Or is Jay White on the card? I mean, Jay White could be in this. Like, there's no reason why he couldn't be in this.
Jay White won the match last night to get into that ladder match, didn't he?
Alex,
is that somebody who remember?
No, Jay White definitely won his ladder, his qualifier match. So is that the name that's not on there then?
Maybe. Well, it said and
I don't
more.
Know. I have to go back and look.
Yeah, it said and more to be determined. So yeah, maybe there's multiples. Yeah. Maybe there's multiples. Maybe there's Gabe Kidd will just be side of ring or something. So we'll see. Either way, I always love those multi-man ladder matches. They've always been something that's awesome for me.
Yeah.
And I'm super pumped to see Takeshita in G1 as well. That's just such a fucking dope addition. It's going to be so good, dude. Next up, we've got IWGP World Heavyweight Championship match, John Moxley versus Tetsuya Naito. As I mentioned, probably I would have said that it's a foregone conclusion that Naito would win, and I still kind of think it is a little bit. I kind of wish he had said that if he lost this match, he would give his place in G1 to Moxley. And I know that's them throwing out breadcrumbs, but I almost feel like that makes it a foregone conclusion that he will win because I don't think there's any chance that Moxley is going to G1. That said, if Moxley won and then fucking entered G1 and Naito's just out, it would fucking blow my mind. And I'm like, New Japan's playing 4D chess right now. Like,
I can't see it. You know what? I will say this.
No, me neither.
AEW is definitely always with WWE, it's kind of like, yeah, you know what's going to happen. You can always see it a mile away. I mean, lots of times I can see it with AEW, but Alex and I will be watching pay-per-views and we'll be like, I did not see that happening.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a chance, but I'm with you. I think Naito gets it.
I think it needs to, go back home. If they did do it, they could even, you know, use a little bit of wordplay and they could sort of get him out, you know, like Moxley could retain and then you could have him fucking say to Naito, like, I don't want your spot. You need to fucking earn your rematch. Come fight me kind of thing. So, you know, there's things you can do, but I think this one is a little bit of a foregone conclusion, but hey, you never know. We will see what happens. And then lastly, I don't know what that fucking binging is. Then lastly, we have the AEW World Championship match, Swerve Strickland versus Will Ospreay. Now, Alex and I would talk about this before, so we'll start with you, Alex, but I had kind of thought, I think this is going to be a really cool match. Like, it is a really cool match. I personally didn't think it was the right time for this with them both holding different titles and all those kind of things. How are you feeling about it now after all the build and stuff? Because the guys have been doing really good work.
Yeah, no, the match is going to be awesome. Like, on paper, it's an awesome match. It's just the titles, both of them having a title, one of them having to take an L. I mean, I guess they don't have – the match could end with some, you know, bullshit going on, but – I just think it's weird that both of these guys on the top of their game right now that one of them is going to lose their title in the main event of a pay-per-view for no reason.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is.
But I'm excited strange. For the match.
Yeah. I'm super excited for the match. I don't know. There's always the chance they can make Will a fucking double champion just to do it. But I feel like they're really putting steam on Swerve. And I just think it's really weird for them to sort of pull the brakes and have to make one of them lose, I guess. And I also think it's a bit of a waste of, you know, another title match, because Will could be defending his title and Swerve could be defending his title and they could both be fighting New Japan guys. But instead they're headlining the fucking show against each other.
Is it both titles though on the line?
No, only the AEW title.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. I didn't know that. I thought both titles were on the line.
Maybe they are, but it only says here on this thing that I'm reading that it's just the AEW championship.
Okay.
I think Swerve's going to win this. And the reason why I think it's going, but here's what I think. I think the Don Callis family is going to fuck him so he can go on his own.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They got fucking
over. And the
only
reason I say that also is because, you know what? Swerve's gone way over because he should go over, but also organically.
Yeah, yeah. The crowd's behind him.
The way his character is. And how many title defenses has he had now since World's End? Not World's End.
A couple.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he keeps it good for business. You know what I mean? And I don't think – and I think that, though, if he's going to do it, you're going to have to do something to protect Will Ospreay. Because – you know what? You can say anything you want. It's just like I thought about Omega, you know, in 2020, 2019, 18, best wrestler on the planet. Sure. Things move in waves. But right now, Will Ospreay, to me, best wrestler on the planet.
Absolutely. I mean, they've been dropping those breadcrumbs for a while, you know, Will saying stuff, and then it shows like the fucking family discontent, you know, with shit he's saying, upset about it backstage. Like, you don't say that shit and blah, blah, blah. So there's definite signs there. Do you see them fucking Will over and like Swerve kind of heel turn, or do you think it's like they fuck over Will because they want to ruin his shit, but then him and Swerve sort of end up kind of helping each other and shaking hands at the end, that sort of vibe? Like, because they're all, I was saying to Alex, I'm like, they are kind of both baby faces at the moment, so it's even weird them versing each other at all, you know?
Yeah, no, I think That makes sense. I never really thought of what you said about the, you know, the Don Callis family, like screwing him over, but I could totally see that happen. And the only other thing that I could see happening is MJF getting involved because of what happened on last night.
What happened?
I know he hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's cool. You can tell me. What happened?
Yeah, so what happened? Will Ospreay or MJF is in the ring with Daniel Garcia.
Yeah.
And MJF offers Daniel Garcia a match at, was it Wembley?
Yeah, Wembley. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, Daniel Garcia's freaking out. Oh, awesome. This is the best opportunity I've ever had in my life. And then Ospreay comes out and offers Daniel Garcia a title shot next week once he has the title or whatever. Sure. And MJF is just kind of standing in the corner pissed off. Like, I can't believe he just came out and staged me.
Yeah.
You know, he's just so pissed off. And he's like, I cannot believe it. You know, then he walks out. And he's mad, you know. Daniel Garcia turns around and goes, oh, thank you so much. And MJF's like, nah, focus on the opportunity you just got. It's cool. And just walks kind of walks out, but MJF is mad at Will Ospreay now too. So,
Well, I will say this, when we're looking at that match that MJF is supposed to have, and people are kind of wondering, like, what's the angle, you'd think it'd be a little something bigger for this event. I think that could make perfect sense at the very end of it, you know, for MJF, you know, maybe to come out, because I'll say this right now. I said Will Ospreay, best wrestler in the world, and I definitely think that he's got the full package, but when it comes to those mic skills and also being a really good wrestler, so is MJF. So I think that people, when they went face-to-face, I think it was the week before or something like that. You know, did you see that, Alex?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everybody was, you know, holy shit. I mean, that's a match that people want now that Ospreay is there. You know, you got... you know, two of the best, you could argue maybe the two best wrestlers in the world when it comes to just the full package of on the mic skills, wrestling, everything. We want it. You know what I mean?
I think as well, like a lot of people do forget like how athletic MJF is. You know what I mean? Because it's not normally his style, but he can really do some crazy stuff. And I think him and Ospreay together, that would easily be like, you could see people being like, that was the match that launched MJF into the next fucking level, you know, if there even is a higher level. But I think that would start getting people, him into that best in the world conversation when you see that level of athleticism out of him.
I think the only thing that's held MJF back is the way they've had to play him, and the fact that not even his attitude, but, you know, I'm only going to wrestle the pay-per-view. I'm only, you know, they Brock Lesnar'd him, you know.
Yeah, basically. Sure, sure.
But I will say this. Mm-hmm. You didn't necessarily have to Brock Lesnar. You know, at a lot of times that was just him being the multi-mogul that he was. Mm-hmm. But the way that they did MJF was super smart.
Yeah.
I even say to Alex, you know, so many guys must respect him in those locker rooms that they know what he's really like off the cameras, but nobody was willing in 3 or 4 years to put out an interview and say, oh, MJF is really this good guy or anything like that. They're like, this is too good not to spill the beans completely.
Yeah. To keep it like totally kayfabe. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, either way, it's coming now, and I think it's going to be a really fun show. Like, you know, there was initially concern from people, like, does it have as much to fucking offer, you know, now that like Okada and Ospreay and stuff have been signed? But I think it does. I think this is going to be a really fun show. The last pay-per-view that AEW did was really good, and same from New Japan. So I will say, though, that like reading through it now, there aren't fucking heaps of New Japan matches on it now that I actually go through. You know, there's a few here. It's like, so Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay. Obviously Will was New Japan, but he's not anymore. Naito and Moxley, yes. Technically there isn't a AEW representative in, I mean, a New Japan representative in the TNT ladder match. I mean, Jack Perry wrestles there. Jay White has, but yeah, not yet. Stephanie Vakua is the New Japan title holder, but she's not really a New Japan wrestler. Tony and Mina, again, Mina is not New Japan, but she is Stardom. Danielson and Shingo is a big one. Zack Sabre is a big one. The MJF match is Samuel L. And then, yeah, we're going to see what happens with these other ones. But you know what I mean? Like, it's not a super heavily New Japan featured show. No. As it has been
it's
in the past.
It's Forbidden Door, though.
That's
what they're trying to do, you know? I mean, and I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
I will say, because of the ties that New Japan presents with definitely Stardom being a sister company.
Sure.
And CMLL also. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where I guess the angle is really going.
Plus,
you have these
player,
guys that just left. Will Ospreay might be AEW, but he's always going to.
Everybody still considers him. Yeah, exactly right. And I'm sure
Okada,
we will see.
Okada's still not AEW to me. He's got a contract out here.
That's a good point. And like you said, I think we'll see more dudes in people's corners and stuff as well. Like Orange Cassidy will probably come out, and like Ishii will be with him and shit like that. And Zack Sabre Jr. Absolutely. Will have the TMDK guys. So I think it will feel more New Japan-y by the time it's done. Anyway, I got to go to work. So I'm going to need to wrap this on up. Thank you guys for your time. It was really nice to meet you, Chris. Alex, it's always a pleasure. We'll do this again sometime. We'll continue to peer pressure Alex to watch the Despay Invitational, and maybe the three of us can chat that up,
I'll do it, yeah.
Awesome. No worries. So everybody, out there. Rate and subscribe. Listen or die. And remember, it's all about peace, love, and pro wrestling. Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Countout Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston, edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neitzy, and the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at Faces Feels Cast, and you can check out the Countout Network and all our sister shows over there at Countout Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening, and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
My body is a roadmap of pain.
DeathmatchWorldwide.com, the official online merchandise store that is only for Deathmatch Wrestling. Featuring official t-shirts from No Peace Underground, John Wayne Murdoch, Akira, Madman Pondo, Zona 23, Neil Diamond Cutter, G Raver, Schlack, Necro Butcher, and many more. If you are a deathmatch wrestler, promotion, manager, or platform, and are interested in joining the web store, send us an email to deathmatchworldwide@yahoo.com. Deathmatchworldwide.com for the violent view.
This has been a Countout Podcast.
Hey. Have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Houston. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.